run a 5K. If you've never run before, walk a 5K. What my point being is there are controlled environments in which you can test your own resiliency to exceed your own expectations, break through your own self-limiting beliefs, and demonstrate to yourself how much agency you do have to achieve the things you want in life.
Welcome to the How Leaders Think podcast, a show that transforms you by renewing your mind and giving you new ways to think. I'm your host, Kenny Lang, and with me today is the John Sabas. He is an entrepreneur, an author, a pioneer, not like chopping down trees pioneer, in the longevity and financial services industry. In his new book, Healthy, Wealthy, Longevity, for those of you with a view, I have the book, he has the book, we all have the book, everybody's getting it, so you should too. A Healthy, Wealthy, Longevity, The Good Things in Life for as Long as Possible. It's just a great title too. I think he should win an award. John discusses longevity's invaluable asset and how individuals can achieve their dreams through good health and financial prosperity. Welcome to the show, John.
Thanks, Kenny. Great to be here today with you and your listeners.
It's going to be a good one. We both have on collared shirts, so I think we've set the right tone. We got the books, we got the shirts, and I don't know if we need to talk about anything else. I think that's all that people tune in for. Just kidding. Tell me, John, what is on your mind?
What is on my mind? I guess today or the last few days over the weekend, I was doing some work. What is on my mind is what's on my mind. And it turns out what's on your mind, it has a lot to do with how reality starts to reflect. And I was thinking about that over the weekend, about how some of my thinking a year, 2 years ago is showing up and how it all works. So that's been what's on my mind. Was what is on my mind is what I experience in life.
I'm already envisioning like probably the best title for this podcast, like how John Sabas thinks about how John Sabas thinks. But no, I've heard, and I don't know who to attribute it to. I'm going to steal it and pretend I thought of it, is the pay attention to what you're paying attention to as a method or just an encouragement for self-reflection. So what do you think, number one, do you think reflecting on how you're thinking from a couple of years ago is showing up in your life today, do you see that as the norm, or do you see like hurry, or do you see something else?
I think maybe the quote is, or another version of that quote is, we are what we think about all day long. And that's really important to remember. We are who we think about all day long. And so we're all in a battle for our own attention and intention. And so a lot of what my book is about is how to shape and focus your own intention towards that which you want out of life, because that's what it's all about, at least from my perspective. We're all on our own each individual journey. And so we all need to figure out what we want and then how to get it. And in order to do that, you really need to keep your mind focused on that. And that is much easily said than done.
Sure. Like all great things, right? Like if doing the things in your book and we're talking about, or being a great leader, if those were easy, a friend of mine posted a LinkedIn photo to accompany this, but he said, like, if growing a great company or leading a great life was easy, we'd all have six pack abs and be billionaires.
That's right.
I really, one, it resonates. At the beginning of the show, obviously, renewing your mind, giving you new ways to think, like, where's the focus? What did you observe in people, humanity, clients, however you came about it, that made the writing this book necessary, right? To have the commentary, the encouragement, the plan, the journey, all these things to say what you just said of where's your focus? Is it on the things you want? How are you staying trained on that? Again, I love the subtitle, The Good Things in Life for as Long as Possible. What made that necessary in our current day and age to write something like that?
Yeah, well, it's easy to lose focus on what is important in life. And so staying focused on what is important, really important in life is, I think, inspired me to write the book. And those things are your health, your own prosperity, your family's mm-hmm. prosperity, your community and connection, and the purpose by which you live. Those are the core tenets of a life well lived. And once you have those to whatever degree and you can obtain them and hold them, you really want to hold on to them for as long as possible, because we all have a very limited time on this planet. And as you age, you'll start to experience it just goes, the time goes faster and faster. And so it's just this experience that we all have. It's really important to take a moment to recognize that we all have this thing called longevity or lifespan. We want to maximize our health span throughout that lifespan so we can, and we want to have prosperity through our lifespan. So again, we can enjoy those good things for as long as possible, because it's going to end. And when you get to the end, you want to be able to look back and you want to say, my life's been a dream. And I've been playing in financial services and longevity for a long time. I was very inspired to write a book around how this intersect of prosperity and longevity work together, and how we need prosperity throughout our entire life. And it becomes particularly challenging as we growing old. So what does healthy aging look like? And as I was writing the book, my mother became ill and she passed. And it was that experience that really crystallized some things that had been floating around in my own head. I was more on the actuarial science and less about what does it mean personally to me, but her death caused me to really internalize that, because that's what she said. She said, my life's been a dream. And so that was like, oh, wow. And it really got personal. And so that made it into the book. And it's really designed to help people get to that place, because that's the place you want to be wherever, whenever that happens.
Right. Yeah. I think it's fair to say most of us don't walk around thinking about, envisioning, or anchoring to like our own mortality and truthfully how brief this life is. Sometimes it feels long. I like what somebody said. It was in the context of talking about raising children, but I think it applies elsewhere. The days are long, but the years are short. So if most people aren't focused on that longevity of not just like, how can I extend my life, but also the quality of it, which I really like that you addressed that, because you could have a long life, but if you don't take care of yourself, like you, it may be shorter, but you could live a long time and be miserable. Where have you found most people's attention is focused? And I think you've probably gotten some really good insight being in financial services. Like when you start talking about people's money, they start getting weird. And sometimes they'll even expose maybe a little bit more of what they really think and feel. My dad's a CFP. I think we talked about that. And so he's had interesting conversations with people. He's like, they can say whatever they want, but then when we get down and we start talking about their money, the real priorities start coming out.
I think, as you're suggesting, we don't think about our own mortality very much. We, for a variety of reasons, good reasons too, by the way. And at the same time, we also don't think of ourselves as elderly either. And most of us will experience a fairly long lifespan. Lifespans have increased massively over the last several decades. So if you're out there listening at age 65 or even 60, I'm almost 60 years of age, you know, you can expect to live another 30 years, providing you're in reasonable good health. And that's a long time. And how do we envision healthy aging? We don't spend enough time thinking about how are we going to age healthy. So we aren't suffering from chronic disease. So that quality of life is there. And so how do you set yourself up? What does healthy aging look like? And I think it's incumbent. Life comes at us so fast and things are moving so quickly when you're young and have young children and your career. And you're putting money away for that 401k and you're saving for retirement, of which you need to do, and you're achieving prosperity in your life, hopefully. But then what role is money as you grow older? How's that going to serve you? And then how are you going to experience healthy aging in such a way that those are high quality years as they should be? And so that's, again, I don't want to dwell too much on that because that's part of the book. It's certainly not about longevity in the sense of I'm not out there offering longevity biohacks. I'm out there saying eat wisely, move more, live with purpose, connect with others. And those are very open kind of constructs for folks to design for themselves so that they can have a higher quality of life throughout all of those years and set themselves up, hopefully improve the odds for better success when they are older.
Gotcha. That makes a lot of sense. I think maybe it'd be helpful to define just a few things and how you've defined them in the book. Obviously, we have some of those key three of healthy, wealthy, longevity. So going through each of those three, how have you defined them? Where have you found some nuance? And if there is a variation on the healthy part, you've mentioned healthy aging. And like, how do you think about and define healthy aging as well?
When we think about health, what I do in the book is I think of health in terms of molecular health, and I break health down and I start with DNA. My entrepreneurial career has been a fascinating one. It led me to work on commercializing molecular biomarkers of health and aging for the life insurance industry. And it gave me an insight into our own health in a way that I certainly didn't expect to experience, but I had to obtain that knowledge in order to create that business. And so when you think of your health, we often think of my heart, my cognitive functioning, my blood pressure, all these kind of systems and measurements. But really, health comes from these molecular bits called cells that are in that power cells. And so what I do explain in the book is how these lifestyle things that we're talking about, eating wisely, moving more, living with purpose, connecting with others, those are lifestyle behavioral things that we all can control. But how does that actually impact, right, our health at a molecular level? And that's a really interesting insight that I gained that I share with others in the book. So that's, I would say, health, which is very unique about the book. When we get to wealth, I think people confuse that with financial wealth. And certainly I break it down to prosperity. Prosperity at some level is, I think, a requirement for most people to be active and engaged in life. Mm-hmm. And so beyond that, though, don't confuse prosperity and financial wealth with wealth, because wealth is experience. It's the experience you gain through life. And so I try to unbundle that so people don't get wrapped up around financial wealth. And so I try to unbundle that in a way. And I do that in a way by relating to the folks in blue zones. And I rely heavily on the notion of blue zones, which are these five geographically dispersed communities where populations were found to live measurably longer and be happier. And the interesting thing about these populations is they don't have a lot of financial wealth. So you can really understand from science and the evidence of these populations on how we can set ourselves up for healthy aging and to have wealthy lives, which means having a quality of life and having quality experiences, because that's ultimately what's going to drive that phrase at the end that says, my life's been a dream, because it's been built off of the wealth of the quality of experiences you've had the pleasure of enjoying for as long as possible.
Gotcha. Yeah. So I love the expanded definition of wealth, because you could be all work and no play. You could accumulate a mass amount of financial wealth, but be as boring as a doorknob. You could have a lot of knowledge and no wisdom, right? That sort of thing. What do you have to offer more people? And I think I'd be curious to know, how are you helping people break out of the belief that sort of life happens to them? Because going back to what you said about these are things that we can control, I'm a huge fan of this phrase, and I tell my children this all the time, because I don't know if it's something about the generation or just my kids. They think their teachers are like out to get them and have turned them into their arch nemesis to give them bad grades and stuff. I was like, no, you didn't do the work. I was like, and that's something you can control, your own effort. So control the controllables. But I'm curious, is that a big part of the shift for people? Because if I'm somebody who already believes that, like I do, then yeah, I pick up this book and I'm like, yeah, control. Okay, now I'm more focused on which parts I'm controlling. But first, I have to believe that I can control so many things around me that have a sense of agency. How do you address that with folks and even leaders who may not fully embrace that notion, or they think it up here, but it's not really internalized?
Try it. I would say
it's like Nike, just do it.
Like,
right?
Do it. Just try it.
Again,
the book really is designed to educate folks about how much agency they do really have. And then if we think about our health, a lot of people will just say, I was born this way. I was born in this financial state, and life's out to get me. And again, when we talk about health, it's a common misunderstanding or belief about how much agency we have. Science basically says that our genetics are really controlling about 20 to 30% of who we are. And that really is, that just gives you a sense for how much agency you have in your own health, okay? Massive amounts. And I would suggest, relative to your prosperity, relative to everything else in your life, it's even more control. I would put it at the 90, depending on who you are, 90 some odd percent control. And so you really have, there's just too many examples out there in the world of people who have shown us that they come from nothing. They had the deck so stacked against them, and yet they succeeded beyond every measurable kind of objective measure, much to their own belief. And so when you see those people, what I would suggest to you is that they did the thing that we started this podcast with, which is they took control of their mind. And they took control of their mind, and they directed it specifically towards something they wanted. And then they started taking action towards it, and they didn't stop. And that's, it's very difficult to teach someone that. But what I would suggest is if you just try it, even on a small controlled basis, one of the things I talk about over my life, I ended up doing some ultra distance type of events. I did Ironman triathlons at one point in my life. And those are, I would call them controlled environments where you're like, how could I possibly do this? Every rational thought in your brain is going to say, I can't swim that far. I can't bike that far. And I certainly can't run that far. I'm going to do them all together in a single day and like feel good about it. And I would suggest it's even so much as run a 5K. If you've never run before, walk a 5K. I can't walk 5K. Again, what my point being is there are controlled environments in which you can test your own resiliency to exceed your own expectations, break through your own self-limiting beliefs, and demonstrate to yourself how much agency you do have to achieve the things you want in life.
I love that. I haven't done a full Ironman. I think when we first talked, I've done two half or 70.3. I like to believe that if I combine those two, I've done a full, but I know it's not on the same level, but that was the same thing for me. I was like, I don't know if I can do this. Like I've never cycled, I've ridden a bike. I like swimming, but it's never been like open water wetsuit. And I've got like to hit some times and do things. And when I got done with the first one, I was just like, oh, 7 hours and 13 minutes later, because I was moving slow, but I did it. I finished. And it just showed like, oh, okay. But I didn't start training at that finished distance. I just started with like, all right, I'll go run 3 miles. All right, I'm going to do a really short workout on my dad's Peloton and see what that's like and how I can keep up. And it just like step by step evolved the same way. Consider myself an accidental entrepreneur. Even though looking back, I can be like, oh no, that this is probably where I was going to end up. But like, I didn't know everything I know now. I worked into that. And I think you chose a word that I really like, because I talk a lot about it, resilience. And do you think, is resilience maybe at the heart or a core element in what you talk about? And is that what we're developing? And people like, don't like control what you can control. And if it doesn't go the way you think, like I try to run a 5K and I end up walking half of it and I feel down or bad about that, is part of your teaching that building that resilience towards failures or perceived failures in life and maybe reframing those?
Yeah, I think we all need to build a resiliency muscle. And whether it's in business or in life, we're all going to hit hard. No one of us really goes through this journey without hitting some hard walls. And so you're going to, you're going to, you're going to need resiliency. So it's advisable to develop that muscle somewhere, somehow, because you're really going to need it and rely on it at certain points. And I think it is a trained behavior. Some people, again, we're all different. So some people just like are naturally great at playing baseball or doing Ironmans. I wasn't great at doing like you. I just did one. I'm like, oh, wow, I was able to do this. And I naturally was just wanted to test my resilience.
I didn't die.
And I wanted to see what other self-limiting beliefs do I hold that aren't true?
Right.
That aren't true. And so you can create micro in test areas where you can test that. And so you're building a muscle. And that muscle is these self-limiting beliefs I have are simply fake. They're not real. And so you need to learn how to break through that in some way. And through that, you're going to also learn that you're going to have hard moments and hard days and hard this and hard that. And so how are you going to get through that? And that's resiliency. And there are techniques and tactics in which to do that. And you need to figure out your own. And the sooner you get to that, the better. I think one of the things, I know you like, we talk about raising kids, and I have three grown children. I often feel like I sheltered my kids a little bit too much. It didn't allow them to build that resiliency muscle maybe earlier on. So, you know, you want to get that resiliency muscle going because you'll need it.
There's a phrase that came to mind during my first 70.3 that something you just said sparked me to remember is competing against what's possible. Yeah. I wasn't competing against anybody else out there that day. I was just competing against what's possible for me. And when I figured out finishing was possible, then I'm like, could I do it faster? Could I do it better? Could I eventually build up to do a full one or something like that? And so it's those little experiments, like you said, if that worked, well, what would I do next? And you just keep tweaking along the way. You don't have to figure it all out now.
Can I just pick up on something you said, which I think is really great? And that is you really are just competing with yourself in a sense that it's your life to define. And what's the comparison is the thief of all joy. So the minute you start competing against others and comparing yourself against others, that's when everything starts getting, if you're competing against yourself, you may end up winning the race. You may be first place, but it's only because you competed against yourself and you broke through limits and your physicality enabled you to do that to be the first finisher of the race. But the person you beat the most was your own self-limiting behavior. And then you hopefully maybe had some natural abilities and techniques and this and that, you beat everyone else. But it wasn't. So I really believe in that method. It's a more holistic method than looking at the field and, oh, I'm going to beat that guy and that guy. Like, that's just super annoying. Right. There's people who do it, but I find them also to be annoying.
I'm very competitive. I love competing against myself, but I love competing. Like, I played soccer and still enjoy playing that. And I love the spirit of like competition, especially like if you have friends on the other side or something like that. And then you're always mixing it up and talking trash and everything like that. But that probably gets back to the community element that you're talking about, which I'd be curious, how have you seen community influence that sort of competing against yourself and seeing what's possible in those little experiments? There's been a lot said about living life in community, be connected, who's your community, this, that, and the other. These communities are against each other. But how have you, in your time, your experience, your research, how have you come to define community, and how much of a role does it play in this healthy, wealthy, longevity concept?
Yeah, I think one way to think about it is if you're competing for virtuous reasons, virtue, right, by definition, betters a community. It betters everyone. You're bettering yourself, but you're bettering everyone else. Versus hedonic, right? Very self-gratifying. I'm going to beat everyone because I'm better. So that's a different way of competing. It's the same. You're still playing the same soccer game, but it's just certainly your mentality by which you're pursuing your competition. So I guess I would suggest that by thinking about virtuous activities, virtuous ways of behaving, and ways that when you're acting through virtue, you're benefiting the community. And so that's a great way. You can't, even if you're winning, you're bringing everyone up with your win. And we all know those people, right? Yeah. The teams that win, but yeah. they bring everyone up along with them versus beat some mm-hmm. people down.
I think right. that's a way to maybe distinguish that and try to get a handle on it, because there may be very competing views on things, but if they all have virtue behind them, then there should be common ground.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Which, to be honest, out of all the things you said, that living, being connected in community is probably the hardest one for me. Although one could argue I've turned my family into my community with 5 children.
Yeah.
So it's like I'm living in a tiny village unto myself. I think I'm the village idiot by some happenstance.
Probably.
Yeah. There'd be a fast agreement on the other side of the house. I want to maybe put this all in a specific context and have you explore that, because a lot of what we've discussed could just applies, like you said, holistically into your life. A lot of the listeners and people I talk to, they're all leaders and typically senior leaders, right? They're in charge of other people. They have goals and measures and all these other things, right? It's higher pressure. And sometimes that high pressure feels like certain choices aren't available to you, or you've got to minimize something in order to maximize something else, like the notion of trade-offs. Mm-hmm. Knowing that you've probably dealt with a lot of high performers, high achievers, people that would be successful by most standards. Do you find a different way to apply these principles, or a way to frame them that makes it maybe more accessible or seem more possible for them? Because somebody could say, yeah, John, that's great, but I'm not going to like lay in a hammock and make sure I eat farm raised chickens and all that. Like, that's nice, but I don't have time for that. I got stuff to do. I've got reports to make. I got calls to take care of.
That's funny. First of all, I don't advocate for laying in a hammock. I'm not a meditator. I was saying to someone in the course of some of the companies that I've been involved with and leading, I was so type A. I couldn't even understand how people could even deal with me. I just had to be such a effing maniac. But I did, even in those times, I've been a student of personal development, personal self-growth. Mm-hmm. And I do think it's incumbent on leaders to study personal development and self-growth, because that's how they're mm-hmm. going to continue to grow. Just because you're in a position of leadership doesn't mean you've got it figured out. Right. Leadership is about lifelong learning. And so if you think you have it figured out, sorry, you don't. And so you've got a lot to learn. And so how do you continue to learn and then share that learning with your others? And that is not about lying in a hammock or eating grass-fed anything. I'm a big advocate of eating red meat. So I say wisely. And if you like meat, mm-hmm. great, eat it. But don't avoid plants. To suggest that plants aren't good for you is like really dumb. Again, you should learn. And so, again, I think that's how I would say to leadership, make sure you're in a mode of lifelong learning. You're trying to improve yourself and you're bringing others up with you. And you're teaching. What do they say? The best way to get really good at something is teach someone else. And so what I would suggest is engage in learning to improve and then teach your team how to do the same. Bring your whole team up. Yeah. And that was some of my best experiences in the form of leadership when I was doing that. We had a lot of fun. And what I found was the team would almost self-cultivate itself, meaning those who weren't involved or interested in that or in growing, they got rid of, the organization kicked them out or they kicked themselves out. And we really had some really incredible teams as a result of that.
Wow. That makes me think of getting back to what you were saying about virtue. Yeah. Like, it's virtuous, right? It's good for the whole, like if I'm bettering myself, then everybody else is better. And would you say that healthy leadership is virtuous?
Absolutely.
Or a virtuous endeavor?
Yeah, versus toxic leadership, right? So toxic leadership would be hedonic leadership. Beating it, running around, screaming at everyone, being angry, this and that, giving horrible. That's what I'm suggesting. Yep.
Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah. Toxic leadership will take years off your life.
Yeah, it'll.
And unfortunately, I think you're going to get one. one bad leader.
Look, and you're
going to make you appreciate the good ones.
And I'm going to have, I'm sure there are plenty of people that would say I had my toxic days as well. But on the whole, I was always trying to be better. And I was trying to work on that, the virtuous side, because again, it's like GDP. If GDP raises in the United States, that means we're all on the whole doing better. That's what we want to achieve. Yeah. That's virtue.
Gotcha. Which I really do appreciate that. It almost makes me want to say, hey, everybody go out and get some books on stoicism for like some virtue. There are some good ones. If you like Ryan Holiday, if you are personal development, you haven't discovered Ryan Holiday's books, why are you listening to us? Like, go read them. No, I'm just kidding. He's got some good things and cool covers. His book is tiny. I don't know why he did that. Like what kind of pockets he's got. A lot of what you've said reminds me of this tool that I use. It's more often in like conflict management or something like that. But some of the questions and statements that you've said, it comes from the empowerment dynamic. And in it, they give like three questions to help like reframe, like if I'm feeling like a victim or something, I'm not using the agency that I have. And I want to be more in that, like I'm a creative being. Like you said, we control way more of our body. Like the DNA is only doing so much. But the first question it asks is, where's your focus? Which is like what you were talking about, is you were thinking about, where is my focus? Where am I focused? Am I focused on the outcomes I want or the problems I have? Which obviously changes your internal state. And based on that, that dictates the actions, right? So those three things. So the author talks about like upgrading the human operating system, and that, which I feel like you're also saying is like, look, like there's a better way here, and it's your choice on whether or not you get to tap into it, which I find really liberating. Like I'm the only one standing in the way of me doing that.
That's right. Yeah.
Do people have a sense of relief when it clicks, like when you see that aha, like when you're speaking or maybe you are counseling a client and this concept finally clicks, is there like, oh, wow, like the world and this person and that person is not holding me back? What's that moment like for somebody, like when you're sitting on the other side of them?
Yeah, I really don't have the experience where I would teach this in my team and with my group teams, and I saw them blossom. I saw them light up. I've seen them do amazing things after post me working with them. I've seen them recognize that they had much more power and much more agency in the opportunity than I think that they thought they had when they first started working with me. And that's been great. And I've seen them, I think, succeed beyond their own expectations. And that's been just super rewarding to see. So I don't do personal coaching, and it does take sustained time to work against these ideas and ideals. But in that context, yeah, I saw incredible personal and professional growth amongst the folks I've been in contact with and continue to. And they come back and they say, oh my God, John, this was great. Or remember when we've done this and look what I've gotten to do since then. And I really value that greatly amongst the relationships that I've been fortunate enough to create and influence.
Yeah, when your leadership outlasts your actual position, then I think you've probably done something right. If somebody's listening to this, they're like, okay, I think I'm getting it, or this just sounds like a better way. What's the first step someone can take in 24 hours, spending little to no money, to start moving towards this more paying attention to what they're paying attention to, and reflection, and moving towards a healthy, wealthy, and longevity?
I would say in the morning, recognize and reflect that you have control over this, your mind, and what you point that mind your mind towards and hold that intention and attention towards is what is the name of the game throughout the day. And I would suggest then just write that down. What do you want that mind to focus on and achieve that day? That's it. That's all you got to do. Now, I did develop a prompt to journal. I did it for myself. I call it prompt journaling. It's a 5-minute journal. I listened to Tim Ferriss years ago, and I was like, I love that. And I looked at that. It was this big thing, and I travel all the time, and I hate it. I don't like to care. I love to see how light I can travel. And so I like designed this little thing at Kinko's, and I've made different versions of it over the years, and I used to hand them out. So version 4.0 that accompanies the book, Healthy, Wealthy, Longevity, is available at my website, johnsabas.com. We just made it available. We're going to announce the release of these prompt journals. And I've handed these things out over the years to friends and associates. And it's really been remarkable how people have enjoyed this little tool. But all I'm suggesting is that it's just a tool to do exactly what I described. Wake up in the morning, think about what you want to think about and get done, write it down, and then go do it. And then the next morning, do it again, and do it again, and do it again. And so that's what the prompt journal is designed to do, is to help facilitate that. That's all.
Gotcha. To build that as a practice. Yep. And a
discipline. It's a practice.
Right?
Exactly. It's a practice. Yep.
It's a compounding effect, it sounds like.
Your life can and should compound in every single way. And again, that's what I write about in this book. You should be compounding in your happiness, your fulfillment, your relationships, your financial bank account, your health. Everything should be compounding and expanding. And if it's not, why not? And how do you take steps to help ensure it does?
Gotcha. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom. And if somebody says, hey, that sounds awesome, I want that, where can they find you? You mentioned the website, but where can they find the book and anything else if they want to connect?
Sure. The book's on Amazon, Healthy, Wealthy, Longevity. John Sabas. I'm on all the social media platforms. And my website, it's got the links, John Sabas, JonSabes.com. Thanks, Kenny. I really appreciate being here today.
Yeah, it was awesome. And I look forward to having you back. I may be tagging you back with some questions after I make my way through it. And I'll keep an eye out for that prompt journal, because I've tried journaling like a dozen times. And it's like, I've almost started.
We'll get you there. I look forward to it.
But thank you to the listener. If you made it this far, I hope that you found value. I'm going to assume that you did, because you kept listening. You didn't turn us off. Or maybe you're just on a long trip. But we appreciate you and hope that this benefited you. If it did, like, rate, review, subscribe, whatever the right button is on the platform you consume this. One, gives me feedback, because I want to make sure I'm making valuable content and episodes for all of you. But also, this gets more attention for the algorithms and different things, and it can be discovered by more people who are just like you, who are on their leadership journey, and it can make it bubble up, and it might just be the right conversation at the right time to unlock their next step. So it's a free and easy way to pay it forward to other leaders on the journey. But until next time, change the way you think, but change the way you lead. We'll see you.